You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Everybody, those who routinely watch this show will know, and those of you who don't watch the show will probably immediately recognize that I am not Bobby Jean nor Jim Bell. My name is Tom Swearingen, and I'm very pleased to be filling in for them tonight. I also first want to acknowledge that theme music, Hot Texas, courtesy of the Hot Texas Swing Band. Jim and Bobby Jean are in Rapid City, South Dakota tonight at the Western Writers of America Conference. And I'm very pleased that they put their trust in me to fill in for them and interview our guest tonight. And I'm going to introduce my guest here in a minute. He probably will pop up on screen. His name is John Chandler. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. And, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. John, I say it's appropriate that I invited John to be my guest tonight because Bobby Jean and Jim are at the Western Writers of America Conference. And John is a three-time winner of the prestigious Spur Award from the Western Writers of America. And we're going to talk about that in a bit. In fact, why don't I start off by just sharing a little bit of background about John. John and I, he's a singer and a songwriter and a novelist. He also writes some nonfiction as well. He can talk all about that in a bit. John and I met several years ago, I suppose. I do perform as a cowboy poet. He does Western singing, songwriting, and we've had the opportunity to share some stages together, and it's always a real pleasure for me to listen to him, and either in person or with one of my collection of John Chandler CDs, one of which never leaves our car, except I brought the CD itself is still in the car, but I brought this in as a prop. But we don't travel without some John Chandler music. So let me tell you a little bit more about John. John is a three-time winner of the prestigious Spur Award from the Western Writers of America. Linwood, his moody examination of Doc Holliday's life, won the Spur Award for Best Song in 2009. While his tribute of Wyoming's hole-in-the-wall country, Morning Star Moon, received the award in 2012. His novel, The Spanish Peaks, received the WWA's Spur Award for Best First Novel, and he was named True West Magazine's Best Western Musician. Wyoming Wind, a novel of Tom Horn, was a finalist for the Colorado Book Award. John does live in Colorado. A seventh-generation Coloradan, John's music and stories reflect his heritage. In his 11 recordings, two novels, two nonfiction works, and myriad short stories and nonfiction articles are collected by Western lifestyle aficionados worldwide. His latest album is Homage. That's one of my collections, an excellent album. It's a recording of cover songs that have influenced his writing and his singing. And important to mention today, this is John's birthday. So happy birthday, John Chandler, and welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer out Thank west. You. Yeah.
It's great. Great to be here. And it's great to be here on my birthday. It means I lived another year, you know?
There you go. There you go. And hopefully the day is yet young and there's still more celebration to come this
That's
evening.
Correct.
Yeah. So Well, we're going to talk about writing primarily. We're going to give opportunity for folks to hear you. I want people to hear you sing and to perform at least some samples of a song or two. That's how I best know you. And then we're also real interested in talking about the novels. So, and at some point in here, in 10 minutes or so, we'll need to stop just for a minute for 30 seconds or whatever for a little commercial announcement. But otherwise, we've got the next 45 minutes together up to about 6:50. And I'm looking forward to letting people know a little bit more about you. And I'm sure I will discover more about you than I already know. So I'm going to start off with just this question. When did you first realize that you were or that you wanted to be a writer?
Oh, gosh, I think maybe like all of us who do this, whether we write novels or short stories or poetry or anything like that, we probably always had an appreciation for it as a child, even. I was probably in high school when I really started knowing that I had a propensity for writing lyrics, obviously. And it's something that worked out well, and I was into short stories. And both you and I think, got into the professional ranks in business capacities and communications fields. And that's exactly where we went there. And while I was in there, I always utilized my Western background that I'd had from a family that came to Colorado in 1858 from Georgia before the Civil War. And it was always a part of me. And then I was always a writer by trade. And then at some point I just turned it to fiction and realized that it's a lot easier to fabricate and tell a couple lies than it is to do all that research.
Okay. So other than the business writing that you did, do you remember the first creative writing that you did?
Oh, gosh.
First thing you wrote?
Yeah, it would be definitely, I wrote, I remember this very distinctly, and I'd have to dig it up sometime. The night that John Lennon was killed, I wrote a very long monograph about my feelings that evening and what had happened, and realized that through that monograph that I think that I had the ability to take fiction and nonfiction in certain forms and meld them together.
Interesting. So in terms of when I introduced you, I said you're a songwriter and an author. Which came first? Did you start out as a songwriter who ended up writing books, or was it the other way around?
Yeah, pretty much as a songwriter who went the book route at some point. My songs have to do with the American West and with that familial connection, obviously. And at some point, it just was natural for it to turn into a longer form.
Yeah. So I mentioned, you've told me a little bit about some of those family connections to some real interesting characters in the West. Why don't you can you just take a couple minutes to let people know?
Yeah. Colorado is a very interesting place. It became a state in 1876. And it's a pretty, pretty amazing history of the folks that came here. The country was split at that time, obviously, and I had people who had come here from both the North and the South. So on my mother's side, they came from Georgia. It was a group called the Georgia Colony that came and colonized parts of southern Colorado. It was also a group called the Russell Party that discovered gold, which led to the Pikes Peak or Bust Gold Rush. One of my ancestors named Decatur Patterson was part of that group. They tried to get back to the South when the Civil War started. And they were held in captivity by friends of theirs, frankly, who were at the Union Army at Fort Union, New Mexico, until the war was over. After the war, they went back and found those who had survived Sherman's wrath, and brought a huge group of settlers and former slaves back to southern Colorado. It's a really interesting history.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that explains why so many of your songs, at least to my mind, deal with the history of the history of the West, and right. No question that that's motivates you and inspires you. So, because you started with songwriting, Why don't you give us a little insight into how your songs develop? I'll just sure. ask. I'll leave it as a basic question, and maybe I'll have a specific.
Well, I tell you what, I'll get my my trusty Goodall out here real quick, and I think generally for the beginning anyway, when you're doing things, you're learning how to play. And that's giving you an outlet to take that creative writing energy that you have and lay it into the groove there of what you're putting together from a musical standpoint. As you become more proficient with an instrument and with knowing melodies, with knowing exactly how you want to say what you want to say, then you realize that your poetry can lay into that groove. So everyone says music first or lyrics first, and the answer is always yes. Yes, one of them is always first. There's no doubt about it. Even to this day, with hundreds of songs written, it changes. It changes constantly. I'll just have all of a sudden a little riff that I love, and something will go in there, or else I'll write a piece of lyric poetry that I really love and try to find the proper thing for it. So, I think I might just give you an idea. One of the songs we're going to discuss tonight is the Spanish Peaks, and let me give you just a little piece of the Spanish Peaks here, and how. Yeah. That, together. I decided once I'd written the book that it was appropriate to have a song, and we'll get into the book a little later, but this is the intro. I had a dream last night as I lay beneath the pines, as the campfire burned to ashes. Moon rose in the sky. I awoke before the dawn's light, tear ran down my cheek. I dreamed of home and family there beneath the Spanish Peaks. And from that intro, we just went on and on and on. Who is this guy that's laying down there? What is his background? Where did he go? Who, and again, what is his story? And that's how books are written.
Cool. Well, I'm leaning forward in my seat wanting to hear the next verse, which I guess is the objective, right?
It is, definitely. There's no doubt about it.
You brought us in. So in some cases, you start with a melody.
Right.
And in other cases, you start with lyrics or right. a piece probably, of lyric.
Yeah, and probably the majority, maybe in the 50th percentile of my tunes, begin with some sort of a lyric poem.
So how many songs do you write that maybe nobody ever hears? How many do you write? What I mean is, do you write a bunch of stuff that never sees the light of day?
Whether it ever sees the light of day or not, it's somewhere. We're just getting at the very beginning now of trying to put together a new recording, and I have I believe I counted 33 songs the other day that aren't going to be on that recording, but 12 of them will. And so, mm-hmm. and so that's what it's coming down to. And those others, it's not that they won't be heard or utilized or whatever. And they'll certainly be demoed. And someday when I'm gone, hopefully my kids and grandkids can listen to them and say, oh yeah, yeah, you know, John did that.
Yeah. Wonderful. So is there anything typical about how long it takes you to write a song?
Probably not. There's one thing I do know is if you hear this constantly as some songwriter, you know, you'll be watching a show out of Nashville and they'll say, oh yeah, I wrote this song in 10 minutes while I was, you know, on the bus, just waiting to get off for a show in Nashville. That's a lie. That never happens. You never write a song in 10 minutes. You never do anything hard in 10 minutes ever. That's of any worth, obviously. But sometimes I'll sit down and I can write a song if I'm really motivated in a day or two, and then go into the editing process, just like we do, you know, you do with your poetry and you edit and you work it until it's fine. And every word is where you want it to be. Yeah. I have one song that we'll be recording at some point called Riverdale Road, which is, having to do with the road outside of Denver. It was a country road when I was growing up. And it probably took me, it took a year to write to get it exactly where I wanted it to be. And it's going to be a great, great recording.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I think, I like you, I will occasionally hear somebody say, well, I was walking out the driveway to the mailbox this morning and this song came to me and here, I'd like to do it for you. And and you hear it and you kind of go, well, you should have taken couple more laps because third verse wasn't necessary. The fourth was awful, right? You could have like a little bit more time could have
absolutely could've right.
Anyway, I can't say that some flash of lightning wouldn't come and you know the inspiration.
It may, basic deal,
but editing is usually in my experience, editing should take longer than the writing.
There's no doubt about it. I think the editing is of supreme importance in any writing endeavor at all, any type.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I want to hear more song before we start talking about books and whatever and continue that. But this would be a good time if we maybe give a little pause and recognize our sponsor tonight.
Great.
Yeah.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Yeah, there you go.
I recognize that voice.
Yeah, that was, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And for those that are just joining tonight, expect to see Bobby Jean and Jim Bell here. They are not. They're in Rapid City, South Dakota at the Western Writers of America Conference. And I am Tom Swearingen and filling in for them tonight with my guest, John Chandler. I'm in Oregon. He's in Colorado. The engineer's in Los Angeles. And it's a wonderful technical world that allows us to all be able to do that. So we just were talking about John's songwriting, and I want to talk a little bit more about that here, and hope you'll bless us with another song at least, and sure, or part of a song, and then we're going to talk about the books that you've written in that process. So when continuing to talk about songs, do you share your work with anyone in the process?
You know, there can be that. Most times it would be just with my wife, Pat. I'm not a prolific co-writer, and a lot of people are. The Nashville way to do things is to get five people in a room and come out with a song, figuring that five people, you know, working on one idea is better than one person working on that. Yeah, apparently. Quite often it doesn't work that way. I think it might have been Johnny Boggs that said, you know, Ernest Hemingway never had a co-writer. And it's kind of fun to think that. I don't know. It's something that I don't do well. I look at each one of my songs as a short story. And one of my collections of songs is in fact called Westerns, because each of the songs is in it, each of the songs on the CD is in effect a Western. And so that's where I go with that. But yeah, I would shed myself. I'm a very solitary writer and of any type.
Okay. You know, it's interesting, and I can appreciate that you're saying you don't co-write much, but I know you have.
Yes.
And I noticed a quote by Waddy Mitchell. Waddy Mitchell, right. Of course, you and I know Waddy Mitchell, and hopefully a lot of people know Waddy Mitchell, just a wonderful top of the pyramid cowboy poet, that's Western great poet. And he said this about you: I've been John Chandler's biggest fan for years, with a voice that would tempt a queen from her husband. He creates songs you can only call his. A great novelist, smoking guitarist, and fine man. It was a bucket list wish to write with him. So you, I know you've written at least something. I think you wrote Backstory with them, didn't you? And maybe some others.
Yeah. I did. And a couple of, another one called Grasshopper, which we're just starting to get out now too. Backstory was very interesting. It was a story about some people you see quite often. There's a Vietnam veteran who had come back and had lost his way through the horrors of war. And Backstory was the backstory of this young man that was always out there someday. And then one day he was the guy in the corner begging for change and so forth. But then one day he wasn't, and they learned his backstory. It was a piece of lyric poetry from Wadi. And I was, I polished it a little bit, to make it fit into a musical bed. And then we recorded it. Ernie Martinez did some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful mandolin work on that as well.
Okay.
Take it, Ernie, as I always say.
Yeah, take it.
I'm really proud of that song, and I was really gratified that someone of Wadi's stature and ability would ask me to work with him.
Yeah, nice. So you work on these songs. Mm-hmm. You share occasionally with Pat, I appreciate that because I do likewise with my wife Carla.
Right.
How is a song ever finished? Do you ever continue to modify them even after they've been performed a bunch of times and maybe even recorded? And the other part of that question is how do you know one is finished?
Sure. First of all, when it is done and you start performing it, there's an automatic growth. If I would listen to the song that you just heard me play, The Spanish Peaks, when I first wrote it 20 some years ago, it would sound very different than it does right now. The lyrics would be the same. It's the melody and the phrasing that changes over time to fit the ways that you find that an audience likes, that you like, it's just something that always evolves. So, and I think you generally know when a song is finished if you put it down and the next day you read it and it's good. Because quite often you read it, and the whole thing that we always deal with as writers, people say, "Oh, I dreamed this last night, and I got in the middle of the night and I wrote down chapter 4, and I looked at it in the morning, it was gibberish." That can happen as well. But I think if you get something, you put it in the drawer till the next day and look it over, and you're going, "Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. I think it's done."
Okay, all right. Well, why don't you share another tune with us? You got something else in mind?
I would be happy to. I've been involved with a group called the Hole in the Wall Gang for 4 decades. It's amazing. There was the dean of Western columnists named Red Fenwick wrote for the Denver Post. An amazing man. And when he was in his late 60s and I was in my early 20s, we had a mentor-mentee relationship. And we became fast friends, and I wrote several songs about him. And over the years, he invited me to join this gang. And over the years, it's been one of the bigger parts of my life to be involved in this. I'm still that we go up every year from Denver and California and all over. We have members all over the country, 50 of us, that go and meet at the Hole in the Wall in central Wyoming. And ride the Hole in the Wall country up there, which is just incredible. And so this particular song is our theme song, but it's also a theme song to a monograph that I just wrote over the past year for the Colorado History Museum, having to deal with this gang, and which they accepted into their chronicles. And so it's something that now I have one of my writings there where anybody who's actually looking to research that area can come and look at it. So, and we're going to be giving a copy of that monograph as well to the Hoofbeats of the Past Museum in KC, Wyoming in September when we're up there writing this year. So, but this is called Through the Gap. So. Through the gap, down the arroyo, cool water, long sweet grass, fresh horses, a place to go. Red wall shines, hot as a fever, warm as your mother's love on the day that you leave her. Lonely riding in the morning mist, hell bent for the rim to the west. A bowler hat and a saddlebag full of cash. And a pistol he'd rarely use. Set the times when he'd had to choose between the hole in the wall and the hole 6 feet in the ground. Through the gap, down the arroyo, cool water and long sweet grass, fresh horses the place to go. Red wall shines, hot as a fever, warm as your mother's love on the day that you leave her. Through the hole there's a hideaway, keeps the wolves at bay, till the next payroll comes to rolling down the railroad line.
Yeah, that's excellent.
First half of the song.
Yeah, first half of the song. And
there you go.
Now, when I've heard you perform that, am I right in recalling spoken word introduction?
There's a spoken word intro on that as well, which I didn't put there.
Yeah, which
the
is
ancients
just
knew the mountains, the great twin peaks that rose from the dusty plains to touch the sky. They were sacred. The Wauhatoya, conquistadores came and saw. See, I'm losing it now because I had to do that. I wasn't going into the song.
Right.
It's about how the conquistadores were probably in southern Colorado and did see the Spanish peaks. And the Spanish peaks, I should mention, are at La Vida, Colorado, which is a small little town near Walsenburg, south of Pueblo, close to the New Mexico line. And they were called by the Utes, the Wauhatoya, the breasts of the world. They're absolutely incredible mountains and one of the most beautiful spots in America.
Yeah. Well, let's, we might come back to hear another song, maybe
sure,
if we have time, but I definitely want to talk about the Spanish Peaks and maybe other novels. But since you've just talked about the Spanish Peaks again, why don't you share with us that novel, how that came about, and
sure,
and then we can talk about the writing process or whatever, where that book may be headed.
Sure. I'd heard these stories from my grandfather and great grandfather when I was young, mostly my grandfather. My great grandfather, I remember as a little bitty kid as being 98, 99 years old before he passed away. And he was a Western legend named Morgan Patterson, friend of Buffalo Bill Cody's. He was a friend of a lot of Western legends. He was a deputy sheriff of Huerfano County, Colorado, and Los Animas County, Colorado. And also, he was a mule master at the mines. Pretty amazing guy. A legendary hunter and outdoorsman as well. And so he was our family's legend. And his son, my grandfather, Russell Patterson, would tell me stories about his father. And one of those stories that he told me was about how his father, Morgan Patterson, knew a guy named Tom Tobin in southern Colorado. Tobin was actually related by their children's marriage to Kit Carson. Tobin was one of the premier trackers and mountain guides at that time, probably a little bit after the mountain men per se, but not too far. Curmudgeonly old guy, and his most famous exploit was tracking down the Bloody Espinosa gang, which were the Espinosas were basically termed as the first serial killers in American history. They killed settlers in southern Colorado, often because of the warfare and friction between Anglo and Hispanic worlds at that time. But they were bloodthirsty, and Tom Tobin decided he was going to put an end to it. One of the three Espinosas was killed near Cripple Creek, Colorado, by the army as they came through. But Tobin tracked the other two down on La Vida Pass between La Vida and Fort Garland, killed both of them with his Sharps 50 caliber. And rather than, because he's a very practical guy, rather than throwing them on horses, taking their bodies down to Fort Garland, he cut their heads off, put them in a sack instead, and took them down, rolled them out on the ground in front of Colonel Tappan at Fort Garland and said, "Here they are, now pay me." That particular story is as compelling as it is, doesn't have a compelling protagonist. So at one point, after knowing the story for forever, and I was deciding what to write for a group that I was working for in California called Newport Publishers. They wanted me to write novels because I had been narrating and abridging novels, Zane Grey's novels, for them for some time. And so I decided to write about that particular guy. I realized that I would have to maybe give him a conscience that he might have lacked in real life. And so his name in real life was Thomas Tate Tobin. So I changed his name in the book to Sam Tate because it's a historical fiction. Gave him a different family than he probably had and a different relationship with Kit Carson than he certainly had in real life. In real life, Kit Carson's son, Billy, actually shot his father-in-law. So it was the Wild and Woolly West. But in this book, it became a search for meaning in life as he tries to save his grandson from the fate that so many others, so that the Espinosas had visited upon so many others. So, and when I started writing it, I realized that all these stories that I'd heard in my childhood and about that beautiful place in Southern Colorado and La Vida and Cachera and the Cacheras River comes down from that area. And you could follow these places and see where all this history took place. And you can see Tom Tobin's grave and you can see all these things. And the story just all started writing itself. I populated it with characters that I felt were historically accurate depictions of early Coloradans and how they would have reacted to things and did react to things.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You have a copy of it there nearby?
I do, yes.
Could you possibly read? I think people ought to hear a sample of
absolutely
talent.
Absolutely. You know, I think what I might just do here quickly is I had a couple things marked, but I think I'm just going to go to the very end of the book here real quick.
Well, that way we don't have to read it. We'll know what happened.
I think you can.
We'll save 30 bucks or 40 bucks or whatever.
this one won't give anything away, I don't think. But it says, 2 days later, Sam Tate slowly descended the east side of La Vida Pass and crossed south to the Cacheras River. As he traveled, the magnificent peaks of the Ouahatoya loomed continually larger. Like a magnet, they drew him home. Home, where he wanted to get his comfort with his wife, Esther. Home, where he'd no longer hear the laughter of Johnny Gorner. Home, where he planned to teach Amos Harold the secrets of the land. The past few days had seemed like months, and he found he could not accurately picture his house at the foot of the Spanish peaks. Like an old friend, its creases and lines were burned into his memory as an entire entity rather than a juxtaposition of individual parts. Now he yearned for the friendship of that house as he reflected on the events that had brought him to this stage in his life. He halted Jake Harold's horse, Lancaster, on the rise above the Cacheras River and looked over the land smoothly spreading out before the Ouahatoya. Below him lay John Francisco's fort, which many people were now calling La Vida. In the distance, the gentle slope of the land fell away into an immense floodplain, densely forested with pinyon pine and sage. Above, the azure sky framed the purple-blue of the great Spanish peaks, its groves of pine and aspen reflecting luminous green. The power of the land itself brought wetness to his eyes. He whispered into the wind, allowing his voice to be scattered across the landscape. It's a hard, hard life. The Ouahatoya listened, and the mountain's spirits were moved.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you done an audio book?
Yes, we did an audiobook for this company originally, Newport Publishers, and as things happened in the corporate world, it had a lot of convolutions, of course, so it was never released.
Yeah,
I do have copies of it, which is great. It was not released, but it's something that we do have, and we also have a wonderful screenplay for this book that's come very, very close to being to fruition several times.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about that. Did you write the screenplay? I think I know the answer to that, but how does that process work?
The process is I have a very good friend in California named Paul Pape. Paul is an actor and a voiceover and a producer, and he's been involved in the entertainment industry for a long time. His first movie was Saturday Night Fever he was in. That long ago. And then he's been in a lot of things, but he's a spectacular voiceover. and also a very good writer. Paul took The Spanish Speaks and did a wonderful screenplay of it. And it's made the rounds over the years, and it always seems to make the rounds at a time when Westerns have fallen out of favor. Just a couple of years ago, it came very close again, probably in the fourth or fifth time, to being a film. And now Paul is actually putting in an episodic form to pitch that way, because everything seems to be in episodes these days. But I feel very confident that at some point it's going to get picked up and it's going to be a film.
Yeah, interesting. Well, as people who are watching and listening can tell, you have a voice that, and you mentioned earlier, you've done narration, voiceover, and you have a wonderful speaking voice.
Thank you.
It's hard to imagine reading that. And I think if people would, how wonderful it would be to have John Chandler read that book. Those of us who read it on our own with our own internal voices, we'll just have to channel our inner John Chandler to make it sound as good as it's written. Because that's
beautiful. We'll see if we can do that again here very quickly as well, as make sure that we get an audio version out.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the process. So do you, when you're working on, in this case, a book, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, do you have a particular process schedule? Do you write at Dark 30, or do you write when you get the inspiration? What's your process?
I'm more of a writer with inspiration. I know so many of my friends do. You know, they 8 o'clock, they're at the desk. They write till 4 o'clock, you know, and then it's done. It's that type of that seems to be kind of a corporate situation for me, very much like I used to in the corporate world. For me, it was always I wrote The Spanish Peaks. I'll remember very, very distinctly, mostly at night. I would get off from doing other things and go up after dinner and write from 6 till 10. And do it that way. And the another book that I was writing at the same time called Wyoming Wind, I did that the same way. And so I think things change for people. I think that you have to make sure that you don't get caught in a certain situation that might stifle your creativity as well. And sometimes, I think you and I were talking about the writing process at one point, and someone's asked me, you know, well, you know, how do you write? How do you sit down and start writing? And I said, well, you stare at a blank piece of paper or a blank screen until a spot of blood forms on your forehead and starts dripping down. And then you're in the mode of pure concentration that you need to be in. And that's about it. There's sometimes you just can't do it. And it's not writer's block, and it's not laziness. It's not anything. It's just, boy, you just can't do it right now. So in my case, I have other writing projects that I've been working on for a very long time that I put to the side because of music. And so some for a decade that I really intend and hope that I get back to very soon.
Is there one that you prefer to take more enjoyment from?
You know, I was asked that by Candy Moulton at Western Writers of America a few years ago in an article that she was doing about me for True West magazine. And I really thought, and I didn't know. And then I started thinking about it. And there's this great, you know, sense of accomplishment when you write a novel. It's this, I put this much work into this and this blood, sweat, and tears. And now there's this tangible book right here. But when you write a song, you've encapsulated a novel in 200 words. I mean, it's the ultimate edit. And for the great songwriters, the Townes Van Zants of the world, or Bobby Gentry's of the world with Ode to Billy Joe, Paul McCartney's of the world, many of the songs that he's done, in particular Eleanor Rigby, where those 200 words tell you everything you need to know about someone's life. That to me probably gives me more enjoyment, ultimately, than anything else that I do. If I can get a song right and I can encapsulate a life that I'm trying to in that 200 to 300 words in that song and a catchy melody, that's really something that really gets me going.
Yeah. So what would be the most difficult part of your writing, of writing?
I think what you just alluded to is just, you know, making time for it. once again, you and I are both in the performance end of things as well. And so that certainly etches into all the time that we have for writing. So I mentioned the Beatles again, and probably twice already, but you know, they decided not to perform anymore at one point. They just wanted to be a studio band. They just wanted to create music. And I think that, you know, that's there's something to be said for that. But we have to make livings as well. And we have to do a lot of different things. So I think for folks like you and I go out on the trail and we hit all these gatherings and these groups of people and we get to know folks and it's very gratifying to do that. But sometimes you're sitting there, you're wishing, okay, I've got this great idea and I want to hop on it right now. And it doesn't work a week later.
Right. Right. Well, you mentioned, and I'm watching the clock. We've got 5 or 6 minutes is all before I need to start wrapping up. Sure. But, you mentioned that you have projects in the works and things that you've been working on forever. I'm just wondering if there's anything that you're working on that you want to share with people or to tell us about it. Anything that we can look forward to seeing or hearing from you?
Well, I've actually just begun a sequel to The Spanish Peaks called The Diamond Country. Just basically working it out. I've got 7 or 8 different projects. The things that I've put aside because of music over the years, there's one that's almost been finished for the longest time. And I've not finished it again, not through any sort of laziness or anything else. It's just, any sort of capabilities that I don't feel that I have. It's a good novel. What I have written is very, very good. And I feel that I'll have that done now recently, soon. And there's some people that I've dealt with over the years that have been waiting for it for a long time, and hopefully they'll want to get into it. It's called He Was No Hero.
And
it's turned in, as I'm writing on it again, I've just recently taken up after about 4 or 5 years of letting it lie fallow, and it's coming along well.
So if people want to, and I think they will after hearing you sing and hearing you read a section of Spanish Peaks, want to get your songs, get your novels, where will they find you? You got a website you could direct us to, or other good ways to find your work?
I love Amazon.com, obviously. They do great stuff. All of my music is on Spotify and those type things. Apple, any of those particular platforms that we have. And also johnchandler.com, John with no H. So it's J-O-N Chandler. My father always said that when I was born, he took one look at me and realized I'd never be able to put together more than 3 letters. So I became J-O-N. And so it's johnchandler.com. And there's a lot about me there, and all of my products you can get a hold of as well.
Okay. What do you have performances coming up that might be of interest to people if they happen to be within a plane ride from where you're going to be?
I do. I have a lot of stuff coming up, which is great. I'll be in Berthoud, Colorado here in the next couple of weeks, as well as in La Vida, Colorado. I've been talking about the Spanish Peaks. My very favorite small venue to play is the La Vida Mercantile, which is owned by Emily W. in La Vida. Absolutely love this place. That's on the 15th. And then later in the summer, I'll be doing small shows, but I'll be back at the Durango Cowboy Gathering in Durango, Colorado, the last week in September.
Yeah, that's a fun time. And I think I get to see you. We'll be in New Mexico at the International Western Music Association convention and awards. And I know you've saw the schedule. You're doing a showcase.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I get to do a showcase, and then you're hosting again. I hope you're hosting the awards show.
Yes, I'll be hosting again, which is great. Yeah. So
you do an excellent job.
Yeah, thank you very much. This year I'll try to make sure that we keep the Jack Daniels off the stage, and then we'll go from
there. Well, you get people to run. Yeah. Let's see. What do we got? I'm looking at the clock again. I don't want Bobby Jean to slap my hand for going over, right? Yeah. What do you enjoy reading? What authors or types of writing, or for your own personal enjoyment, that's written by other folks?
Yeah, that changes a lot, obviously. I enjoy reading my friends. You know, I enjoy reading Johnny Boggs. I enjoy reading Laura Nestleman. And so many folks that are in Western Writers of America that we've had the chance to meet over the years. I love that. But I also love the classics still. I pulled open a box the other day and all the great dystopian novels were in there. So I'm rereading Brave New World in 1984 right now from the time when I was, in my 20s. And so all those things, just whatever catches you at the moment, the mystery novels that are out there, the Jack Reacher novels are just absolutely a hoot for light reading. But there's also some really great stuff there. We lost Cormac McCarthy last week, and that was a huge loss for the literary world. There are so many great writers out there. It's hard to single anyone out, but perhaps my favorite still is Elmer Kelton, who was the perhaps I think greatest Western writer along with Larry McMurtry. And Elmer's work I still reread constantly, although he's been gone about a decade.
Mm-hmm. And what about music? What genres do you are you primarily of right. Western folk aficionado or do you have a broader interest?
Yeah, I am. But it's really funny. I was talking with Dave Stamey and Mike Fleming at the Santa Clarita Festival. And we all agreed that when we're on the road, we have on our Sirius radio, we have Seriously Sinatra on. And we're listening to those incredible songs from the 30s, 40s, and 50s that the songwriters that were so impacted by World War II. And the songs have so much meaning and they're so incredibly well crafted. I probably listen to that more than I listen to anything these days.
Yeah, that's fun. There's a radio station I need to connect you because I'd love to hear your music. There's a radio station in Olympia, Washington that I can get online. And I was listening the other day and they played Sinatra. Uh-huh. And then they played one of my poems. Oh, yeah. And then they played Don Edwards. And I thought, well, I was thrilled. But it was like the fact that sort of genreless, good music, storytelling music of whatever kinds. There's no reason that Sinatra does not fit with John Chandler, Dave Stamey, et cetera, whatever. But it was like,
I just love
it. What did I just hear? I just heard Sinatra. And then, yeah, it was phenomenal. It was, made me, I'm still smiling about it.
We need more pirate radio stations that just put stuff on that they like and you can listen to it.
Yeah.
You travel across I-80 in Wyoming, and that's what you'd catch constantly. Every 10 miles, there'd be a new little pirate station on.
Yeah. No, this is a good thing. I'll connect you. It's real wild radio.
And, great.
So fun deal. Well, I need to start wrapping up here, and I want to just thank you again, John Chandler, himself, a three-time winner of Spur Awards from the Western Writers of America, and hope that Bobby Jean and Jim Bell are having a fabulous time at the Western Writers of America Conference in South Dakota. And I want to let everybody know that they will be back next week and their show June 29th. They return with their special guests, Brian Andrews and Jeffrey Wilson. This best-selling writing team will talk about their newest Ripped from the Headlines thriller. That's the way Bobby Jean puts it. Ripped from the Headlines thriller, Dempsey. So we'll find out what Dempsey's all about. And do you have any final words or any comments that you make before I give a nod to Sam to play the theme music?
I just really appreciate the opportunity to come and chat with you for a while, Tom. I mean, this we get the opportunity infrequently, so I just can't wait till we get the chance to do it again. Do it again in Albuquerque, and I want to thank Bobby Jean and Jim as well for asking me to be on the show.
So your guitar is still there. So we've got a minute. Do a minute or so, just something of interest that you want to share with us.
Okay, let's see what I have. So let's see. I dusted off my poster, polished up my gun, jotted down my memories, my moments in the sun. While rights and reasons, I should not be standing here, I outlived my brother by another 30 years. And tonight.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. And thank you, Sam, in the studio in L.A. for pushing the buttons. And until next week, this is Rendezvous with a Writer Out West. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.